Kink 101 is proud to present Deviant Discussions, where kinksters come together and put the why in kink. With Diavol Diablo, Subtle Shadow, and Glass Girl, this is Deviant Discussions.
I feel like I'm going to burp. Like, I get really nervous, and then I want to burp. It's an anxiety thing.
That's what she said.
Yeah, I get really nervous and then I want to burp. That sounds arousing.
Probably is for somebody.
Probably. Oh my God, I remember there was this time with this guy who was into farting, and he kept messaging me, and his profile picture was a cartoon drawing of somebody's, like, you know, like a cloud of steam cartoon image coming out of someone's ass into another person's face. And it was horrific. I was traumatized for a little while.
Aww.
But yeah, that is the real thing, apparently. It is,
yeah. I've seen
gaseous excretions onto someone's face. But
gaseous excretions.
I mean, it's not one for me. If it smelled like coconut or something, I might be into that, but with the smells,
I'm sure that
I've encountered,
can be figured out. I mean, I bet a lot of it can be affected by what you're eating.
I mean, that does kind of tweak my chemistry nerd a little bit, but
I mean, asparagus, right?
Why? What does asparagus make your farts smell like?
Well, it doesn't make your farts smell, but it makes your pee smell.
Does it?
Oh yeah, my God, yes.
What does it make it smell of?
It's actually a genetic thing they discovered. It smells terrible.
Terrible.
It smells like the produce drawer in your fridge if you forgot to take, like, the leafy greens out for about 3 weeks, and you know they got all wilty and moldy, and it just smells bad. That's pretty much what it smells like.
It's almost immediate too. Like,
really?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Like, I think it's happened like the same night that I had asparagus with my dinner.
I mean, I feel like I'm gonna have to test this for science now, but
you should. Asparagus is yummy.
I love asparagus. Anyway. Oh,
I mean, if Estatus was really into, like, water sports, that could be a really,
oh my Ooh. God, what Ugh. An idea.
That is intense.
You just got, I don't know, I think I'd have to test out, does it balance it out if you drink a shit ton of water that suddenly it doesn't smell as bad anymore, or am I just gonna have to eat more asparagus?
I think you would just have to, well, I don't actually think it can water it down.
No.
For me, it lasts, the first pee after eating asparagus tends to be the most pungent. And then after that, it kind of fades. I might get a hint of it in the morning, but for the most part, it's gone. Like,
yeah.
So
lasts about a day.
Yeah. But I drink a whole lot of water, so I don't think, like, I drink probably more water than a person should. So it's probably not going to affect it if you drink a whole bunch of water.
Interesting.
Yeah. I do like the sadistic asparagus pee, though. That's
I really
awesome.
Like that. I mean, sadistic asparagus pee sounds like it would be my comic book, like, villain name. That's a fantastic idea.
Sadistic asparagus pee is the name of, like, the next punk rock album, I think.
It makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable that the only one out of us that's not, like, a declared sadist is the one that came up with that. I mean, I feel like we should be watching you a little bit more closely.
Maybe.
Who? Me?
No, Glass.
Me. Oh, okay. I was about to say, I'm the sadist.
Exactly. Yeah, Glass. And the one that's not the sadist is the one that was like, hey, why not eat a load of asparagus?
Well, I think it's mostly because, I don't know, I think that masochists can come up with some pretty fucking sadistic ideas.
Yeah.
Do you think that it's easier to come up with horrible sadistic ideas as a masochist if you're thinking about them being directed to yourself or to somebody else? Like, do you come up with the ideas because you want them doing to you, or do you come up with the ideas because it's kind of like, if they're being horrible to someone else, they're not being horrible to me?
It's more like, that'd be cool to watch.
That's how I've always approached it. Even before I explored the sadistic side, I would come up with things that I would love for somebody to do to somebody else.
Oh God, I know someone that I would love to sit you two down with to talk to, because he is so creative. And when I used to go to the events where he worked behind the bar. So I would just sit at the bar most of the evening, and he would tell me all these different ideas. He had like a little black book of sadist ideas and everything. And he'd tell me about different things, and I'd be like, oh, well, hey, what about if you tried this? And he's like, you're fucked up. I like it. And it would be great sitting you two down with him and just hearing what comes out.
Yeah. I've had some pretty intense ideas. Once I've started to like embrace the sadistic part of myself, I've come up with some pretty emotional S&M kind of things, like reading back. Like I had this idea with a threesome where it's a dom and another sub, and I'm topping the sub by simply reading the love letters that she wrote to her dom out that's loud to one. Her and making fun of them as I laugh sadistically.
It's I beautiful. Like that. Anyway. I like being made to read my own stuff. It makes me horribly, horribly uncomfortable. I've had
does it really? How interesting.
Yeah, like I've had a couple of D-types that are like, yeah, I've read it, but I want you to read it to me. And I'm like, why? And they're like, just read it to me because I'm asking you to. And it's horrible. I hate reading my own stuff out loud. And then you find other people that just can't get enough of the sound of their own voice and will happily read you the fucking phone book if you give them the opportunity.
That's me.
I don't know. Yeah, but your stuff's like decent quality. I don't mind hearing it. Other people that just are like, would you like me to read something? I'm like, no. I mean, I'm not going to name any names, but I'm pretty sure Shadow knows who I'm on about.
Yep. I wasn't going to say anything, but you went there.
I did go there. Hey, why not? Look at that. He got a shout out. He'll feel special. Anyway. Okay, so I think, yeah, my next question for you guys, I suppose, is you talk about like coming up with ideas of things that you'd like to watch and stuff like that. But I wondered if, like, how would it feel in your mind if you were the person being introduced to an experience that way? Like, if someone else had cooked it up for you and they were there watching you experience it, like, what would that be like on the other side of the coin?
Like a third person?
Yeah. So like you're saying that would be cool to watch, for example, if someone else was that'd be cool to watch and they discussed it with like the person you were doing the scene with and they came up with it all together and you knew what was going to happen. It had been negotiated safely and things like that. But this other person was there to watch their idea come to life on you. So like if I was doing a scene with Shadow, for example, and you and Shadow talked through, oh, hey, you know, I'd really like to see you do this with Dee Dee. And Shadow did it with me and you were there to experience it. How would you feel as me, for example, if you were the person going through it with someone else watching?
Like for me, I'm very much a voyeur, but I have like zero exhibitionist in me. So yeah, that probably wouldn't happen.
That's interesting because I thought I was not an exhibitionist until somebody watched me be a sadist, like be a top. And I am an exhibitionist as a top and totally not as a bottom. Like I would rather that any activities I'm doing where I'm a bottom are not viewable to, you know, others.
I definitely agree. I'm the same. Like I think one of the, like my goal, if you will, in terms of topping is to do what I call, I don't know if there's a real term for it, but I call it choreographed topping, where it's like set to music and you do it in time with the beat of the music. And it's like a display thing. It's done especially for how it would look because you're making all these impacts in time with the beat of the music and stuff. That is my ultimate goal. But I would absolutely fucking hate to be the person on the bottom being watched, like, absolutely not. I mean, I don't like being exposed to the top, never mind anybody else. So I totally get where that's coming from, like being an exhibitionist on one side and not the other.
I don't know that I would mind if like if it was a threesome, for example, and all three people were actively involved. That I could do. And even if someone would pause for a minute to take something in as far as like visually, but if it's like someone sitting on the sidelines and watching, that would be a no. It's one of the reasons why I don't do public play, because I just, it takes me too far out of the headspace actually enjoy the experience myself.
So what about like outdoors sex, where it's not play as such, it's just like intimacy outdoors, like any kind of, not public displays of affection because that's different, but like having sex in woodland, for example, like is that something you could do where you might risk it?
Sure, that's hot. Yeah,
really?
For sure. Yeah.
Really? Oh my God. Now, see, I hate that. I mean, I've had experience of it and I just, I fucking hate it. And like, I don't know. That for me is what takes me out of the headspace. Like, I feel being intimate with someone is a headspace for me. And anything that can like be a distraction or an interruption, just the threat of it almost is enough to take me out of the headspace.
I mean, this, I don't know if this is really relatable because it's not sex per se, but when I had a partner, there was a rule and we were, you know, together, but I couldn't wear bra or panties at any time. And so I was wearing a dress and we were, you know, walking down a hallway, which I thought was deserted. And I turned around and pulled my, it was like one of those, you know, like the off shoulder dresses that have like the elastic. And so I turned around and yanked it down and did like a little jiggle dance and flashed him.
Jiggle dance.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and out for like a fair amount of time. And well, it felt like a fair amount of time. It probably wasn't that long. And I looked at his face and it was like this look of like shock. And I expected like enjoyment, right? And he's like pointing and I realized like there's surveillance, like video.
Oh my God.
Oh no.
Like all around.
Oh no.
Yeah.
My mom had an experience like that. I mean, it was totally unrelated to kink, but she had that and it was hilarious at the time. We were staying at a hotel, like a theme park hotel. And her partner at the time, she was wearing like these zip up back trousers and he walked behind her and just unzipped it. So her pants fell straight down. And she just like, she wasn't even a lady about it. She just bent full forward to pull the pants up. And it was only the next day when we were leaving that as we were walking down this hallway and she's like laughing and telling us the story, we noticed all of these cameras down the hallway and they were like pointing right at where she had full on bent over and winked at the security man.
Awesome. Oh my, I was mortified. I was just
I would die.
Yeah,
I would actually
that would be so
die.
Embarrassing.
Ugh. Well, and it wasn't like I did a quick flash. Like I did
did a jiggle dance.
A jiggle dance. Someone somewhere has that on video and they just like loop it when they're having a bad day and they watch the jiggle dance and all is right in the world.
Glasses there somewhere.
Yeah. see, that'd make me happy. I'd be happy with a little video of the jiggle dance. Just saying. I mean, my birthday is in December, so.
All right. Good to know.
Okay, so how were you guys introduced to kink? I think this is something that I haven't really covered, like, especially with you, Glass. I definitely don't know your story of how you arrived at the kinky front door. And I'd like to know whether it was a slow introduction, you had a kinky partner, or were you the one that said, hey, let's try this, that kind of thing?
Do you remember? Oh, my God. Maybe you guys won't remember this, but do you remember, it's a really horrible movie, but do you remember the movie Exit to Eden?
That sounds so familiar to me.
It actually has like Rosie O'Donnell in it.
No, I don't know that I know.
And
it.
Dana Delaney.
Old school.
And there's like a crime on this like island and Rosie O'Donnell is a detective or what have you, and she goes undercover. Well, it's a BDSM sex island.
Oh.
Yes. And there's a scene in it with a hairbrush. And it's actually a woman dominant, doming a man in it. And I remember watching it and thinking, oh my, like thinking it was like the hottest thing I'd ever seen. Like I had never even, you know, been kind of exposed at that point to something like that. I was, you know, under adult age, we'll say, and thinking that that was like so hot, and that I would totally want to try something like that. And so it kind of started there as far as like introducing spanking when I was, you know, having sex with a partner. And then it really was put on pause for a long time, probably until about 5 or 6 years ago, when I started exploring and engaging in that side of myself more.
I've spent a lot of time thinking about this, and, you know, my story kind of evolves as I remember things. For sure, I was into kink without knowing what it was, or as early as I can remember. As a kid, especially, like, I was really drawn to the cartoons where somebody was roped up, or there was like a sense of like, they were helpless. Like, I don't know if you guys ever watched Looney Tunes. Do they have that in places other than the United States?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. But there's like the conveyor belt scenes where, like, you know, there's some character might be caught on this conveyor belt and there's all these different things happening to them. And they, like, you know, it's like a very like kind of more abstract indicator to me that I was pulled towards things where I might not be in full control of what's happening in the situation. But probably my first interactions with BDSM happened when the internet became a thing, and I discovered initially I was very much into spanking. Like, I think I came across Cindy Crawford's ass in a beautiful swimsuit, and God, she still has the most beautiful ass. And from there, I think it kind of progressed. Like, I discovered, you know, that I could type things into this magical search bar and it would come up with various delicious pictures. And I found Literotica, which has been around since, I don't even know. They've never changed their splash page, which still cracks me up that it looks exactly like it did in the late 90s. But Literotica has a section called BDSM. And I distinctly remember, like, I had read the stories about just some of their other categories, and I saw the BDSM and I was like, oh, I wonder what that is. And like, I clicked on it and I was like, oh, okay, this sounds like something I would enjoy. And so from there, you know, I was able to, I began to have the vocabulary to know what I was looking for and what I wanted to read about. Yeah, that's pretty much what I remember.
But even when, you know, I was kind of on pause, I mean, I was definitely on Literotica as well, you know, reading and, you know, books as well, videos and porn for sure. My partner at the time was extremely vanilla and very reluctant to try anything kind of outside of what traditional kind of missionary sex looks like. So that's why I was, you know, if they had been open to exploring, I think I would have been, you know, practicing those kinks all along for sure.
See, I can't remember I remember different things and how they came into being. And I mean, like, my first proper sense of, I suppose, fetish was watching, you know, like Gillette adverts and things like that of men shaving. And I was like way too young to know what it was that it was like meaning. Mm-hmm. I just was absolutely hypnotized and I loved it. Like, if a Gillette advert came on, I would stop what I was doing and just have to be transfixed watching the way that the razor moved and seeing like the clean skin appear. And oh God, I loved it. I still love it. It's oh, so good. But that's like the earliest memory I have of something being ever so slightly different about DD. And then it kind of just evolved over time that, like, my imagination and the stories that I would create and things like that would be very out there and different, but I never had a name to put to it. It was just a thing that I would write about or whatever. And when I was with my first boyfriend, like our sex life was, you know, it was young and relatively experimental, I guess, for when you've never done anything before. But it wasn't what I would call kinky. I mean, there was a lot of role play, and the role play topics that we would include were definitely risque. But I still didn't have a name to put to it. And I started writing a lot more like adult fiction, I suppose, like erotica and stuff. And there was this one story that I wrote, and it was very taboo, like very, very taboo. But the main character in it was called, well, I can't really say what it was called because I would be out in the person, but this unusual name anyway, that I'd never met anybody with this name before. And I went to college when I was 17 and had a big group of friends, and we were all sat around one lunchtime, and they were watching like an episode of some cartoon thing on their laptop. And half of us were like just laughing and joking, and the other half were nerding out over this program. And this guy came along and was like, "Hey, are you watching such and such a thing?" And they were like, "Yeah." And he just plonked himself down in the big old group of us. We didn't have a clue who he was or anything. And my friend, she was very outspoken. She was just like, "Hello, random person, who are you?" And he was like, "Oh, I'm X." And the name was from this story.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
Everyone knew. Everyone had read this story, and they were like, "You're really fucked up, but it's really good." And so as soon as he said his name, honestly, like, you heard everyone turn to me, like you heard the whip of their necks as they looked at me.
Oh,
and I was
God.
Just like, you are my next person. I must have you. And so anyway, like, a long story short, eventually I managed to win this guy over, and we were in a relationship for like 6 years or something. But he would... he would enact the story. Once he read it, he would act it out for me and let me like live okay. through my little fantasy there. And
hold on, you've got to tell us what the story was about.
I really genuinely I mean, it's a taboo topic that is like a big no-no that you're not allowed to feature like in places.
Okay.
It covered more than one taboo topic, let's say that. There were different topics that all related to one another, and they were not the kind of thing that you admit to getting off over. But anyway, yeah, so that was, it was awesome getting to act out this story that I'd written. And then there were other things that we would try out. And I remember once, like, I was blowing him in the living room, and I said, "I want you to hit me." And he's like, "What?" Like, halfway through getting his dick sucked, he's like, "I don't want to have to think about things." And I'm like, "Just backhand me." And so, like, you know, a little bit goading and trying to push him, and eventually he just backhanded me, and I was like, "Yes," and went to town on his penis, and it was amazing. So I'd say there'd been like forays into it, and I'd definitely always been into weird, unusual shit, but never had names to put to them. And it was probably when I met my female partner, and she was into topping, like she would do spanking and caning and things. She had someone that had previously been like her somewhat regular bottom. And she started like putting the names to things for me. And then from there I joined FetLife and things like that and learned even more. But yeah, there you go. That's my very brief introduction. Sorry.
I loved it. Great story.
So it leads me nicely into my next question for you. Do you think that you could introduce someone that was brand new, like had never done it, didn't have any names for anything, and was like a complete newcomer? Do you think that you could actually introduce them as your partner to the kink lifestyle? Or do you think that would be too risky?
I know for me, I tried. Like, certainly, you know, tried introducing, you know, things like spanking, biting, which is for me now, like where I am now, not kinky at all, but, you know, biting, even dirty talk, made him uncomfortable. So those are things that I certainly try to, you know, very, in my mind, kind of beginner entry into kink, tried to introduce. I think it would all depend on the willingness of the partner. If they are game to learn, then I am game to teach.
That's awesome. I have like a few experiences where I've introduced people to something that they've like voiced an interest in. Usually I've only done it if it's something that I already have an understanding of or I've done before. But there's been like a couple of times where partners have said, you know, have you ever thought about trying this? And I'm like, you know what? I haven't thought about trying that. And they kind of get that little, you know, hopeful look in their eyes of, does that mean we can try it? And I don't know sometimes if it's because I'm not familiar with it or if it's just because I feel somewhat like I should have thought of it if I was going to participate in it. And I get this kind of reluctance to do it, I guess. So like, even though I was that person once that was like, hey, can we try this? I feel sometimes like I'm maybe a bit selfish if I turn around and say, I don't want to try it. But at the same time, I don't know how to agree and go about it if it's not something that was on my radar. Does that make sense?
It does. I think you touch on something that I've struggled with as well, which is if I see somebody on a dating site, for example, who states in their profile that they're new but super interested in exploring kink, I feel like I have a judgment against that for whatever reason. And it's silly because, you know, well, it's interesting because it's like I have a double standard, right? Like, I mean, I spend the bulk of my time outside of work writing educational components for a website designed for beginners. And I avoid them in my dating life. And it makes me feel snobby, you know, like I think, yeah, I don't know. At this point in my life, I think it might be tied to just having been in a pretty much vanilla relationship, you know, for 14 years of my life and recognizing that kink has become something that is so integral to my own identity that like I need to have it present. And I don't know, I guess I need it in another partner. And I think it's more like a preference that they be on the same kind of point in their journey as I am, if not that they have more experience.
Yeah.
But saying that just makes me feel so bad.
Like suddenly you feel like an elitist, don't you?
Yeah. Because, you know, I was frustrated when I was new. And this is my experience with polyamory as well. Like when I was new to poly, there was, I still see it a lot in the community, which is that no poly newbies, you know, like we don't. It's if you get in a relationship with someone who's never been in a poly relationship, you can expect that it's just going to fail miserably or something.
But then you have to wonder how anybody gets into poly if no one's willing to take it off.
Exactly. And I find it personally pretty frustrating. I've dated poly people and was in kind of a little brief, for lack of a better term, unicorn situation. But like, I still find it very frustrating because I am sincere about it. And I think the more that I talk to people in the poly community, the more I discover that it's not really about how sincere you are about the pursuing such a relationship. It's just that you don't fully understand everything that, you know, you just don't have the experience needed to kind of know exactly what you want within poly, I guess. So like the risk of getting hurt becomes a little bit higher when you start a relationship with someone who is still exploring and doesn't quite know where they fall on the poly spectrum. But that's just my interpretation. I don't know if it's true, but I think that both in kink and in poly, there's something to be said about having made one or two mistakes so that you understand what you're getting into.
Yeah, and I think that that's fair in a lot of ways, but like one of my I suppose it's like a warning bell that goes off in my head at the same time is, like, I like to think that, especially in our position of working like with Kink 101 and trying to create this information resource and things, if we are the people that are saying, you know, I'd rather work with or play with or deal with relationships with people that have that level of experience, that they know what they're getting into and things like that, you know, we're kind of almost at risk of pushing these people into the arms of the ones that we're trying to warn them about. Yeah. And it's trying to find that balance between helping someone open their, you know, kinky world right up. But I suppose, well, it's the whole thing about mentoring, you know, we don't want to play with people as the mentors. You want to just be the person that's there to give them guidance, give them advice, and try and steer them away from the dangers. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, if we're not willing to even embark on relationships with these people, are we really in a position to say, hey, you know, I'll tell you the things that I know, but I'm not willing to be in a relationship with someone that's in your situation? It sounds like we're almost contradicting ourselves. And I wonder if there's a way around that.
I know for myself, I'm not opposed to, like I said, you know, if someone wants to learn, and share their fantasies with me and, you know, we're in a bonded relationship, then I am game to teach. I think what with me, and, you know, as I'm scrolling through dating sites and things like that, I mean, eagerness is great and being new to something, I mean, of course it's exciting, but for me, it's really, really important to always put people before kink. So person before kink. Mm. And so if I'm speaking with someone new in, you know, with the idea of maybe we will date or maybe we will get into a relationship and kink is all they want to talk about, it's a big turnoff for me.
Yeah. I can understand that for sure.
And so that's the caveat for me. You know, I want to know you as a person and see if we're compatible as people. And then maybe we can do some kinky fuckery, you know?
Yeah. And I think that that is definitely the key, isn't it? Is how these people approach. Like, you might say, I would prefer to be in a relationship with someone who's already experienced X level of kink. But you might have someone who says, well, I've never really done it. You know, the most that I've done is this, or I've thought about doing this, or one time I watched this porn and it was about whatever activity. But you have that magical opportunity when you're building up a relationship with someone to explore the things, the very things that I've just, you know, said have in the past made me feel selfish, where they'll say, you know, I'm interested in trying this, but it's as part of your relationship. It's not someone coming to you and saying, yeah, I'm interested in kink and blah, blah, blah. And then you always have that. It's like it's hanging over your head almost. You're expected to be kinky because this person's interested in kink.
Yeah. And like a kink dispenser.
Yeah. And I've found that, like, when I've been on the dating scene, which is rare, but it happens now and then, I've kind of said that I have alternative interests, but I've really shied away from ever explaining what they are until I've got a sense of the person, because, you know, I don't want to say I'm kinky and be treated, like you say, as a kink dispenser. I don't want to be their introduction to kink. I want to be a resource if they're interested in kink rather than their introduction to kink, I think is where I'm trying to land, if that makes any iota of sense. It does in my head.
For you guys, does it also, like, when I see someone, you know, let's say on a dating site, for example, and they are a male identifying and they're saying they're new to kink and they're eager, you know, I'm always hesitant because of that. But also because it's like, you're new to kink, but do you know, are you dominant? Are you submissive? Are you switchy? Like, if you're not even at that stage yet, I am not a dom. I am not a top. So is it worth us discussing and exploring to find out that you actually are submissive at heart? Mm. which is a beautiful, it's a beautiful thing. If, you know, would be a beautiful and wonderful thing if I identified that way. Right.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
I think for me, another challenge to all of this is that my default when it comes to somebody who is new to kink is to, I almost involuntarily go into educator mode.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
A mentor mode or
like a platonic.
A very platonic mode.
You're almost friend zone them.
Yeah. Like, and it's so quick that it happens that I rarely catch it before it's there. Like I just, as this mental block that I have to work through. So it's more, I think that part of it for me is that I suddenly feel a strong need to protect that person.
Yeah.
And that kind of need is a red flag for me personally, because I know where those kind of behaviors and thought patterns can lead me when it comes to relationships. So like, you know, for example, you know, I've been in codependent relationships before where I'm the caretaker. And so I suddenly feel that caretaker instinct and it causes me to pull back and it turns on that platonic mindset, I think.
And I don't think that that's a bad thing as such. I mean, there's a big difference between being someone who says I'm like, it's, you know, it's like saying you're not going to have sex with virgins, isn't it? Like it's the same kind of principle, but I think being able to unlock that protective guidance system, I suppose, is super important because, you know, it would be so easy to take advantage of these people. Especially, I think it's rife a lot of the time when people are newcomers or interested that they still very much have that misconception that kink is just a way of having sex in a dirtier way.
Right.
I feel like my line in the sand is almost, if they assume that kink is just about sex, then straight away I know that we're not going to be compatible and I'm going to struggle even to try and educate them out of that, but I'll give it a shot. But it's always just going to be education. Whereas if it's someone who has got past that and they're like, you know, I have some weird quirks that they could be considered kinks, but it's not about sex for me, I'd be like, okay, I'm interested in learning more about this person, maybe being able to share some some knowledge of my own, but also I'm fascinated by what drives this person, what motivates them. And then you have that almost, there's a chance that you could end up in a relationship with them. Or, you know, you might just become really good friends, or you might just be able to be that guide that they might need. And I think it's very much, it depends whether or not someone has the emotional intelligence to understand what kink is as to whether or not I sort of dismiss them, I guess. But the same could be said about vanilla relationships. I mean, if I encounter someone that's just like horny all the time, we're not going to be compatible.
Thanks for joining us this week. If you'd like to know more about kink and BDSM, or if you have your own adventure to share, please visit kink101.com. That's kynk101.com. Because we put the Y in kink.